And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, which for one night only is being rebranded as The Carew Show, because we are joined by Lakers reserve guard, Colts sensation, and out-and-out good basketball player. Just a good player. Enough with the memes. Just a good player. Alex Caruso, how are you?
That was probably the best intro I've ever gotten. I'm doing great, man. Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You always got to warm people up at the beginning to sucker them into saying damaging later in the podcast.
Comfort is everything.
So you're hanging out. You're hanging in. Everyone's safe. Your family's all safe. Loved ones are doing okay.
Yeah, everybody's healthy. Everybody's healthy, doing their best to stay out of the public and continue being healthy.
How's your jump shot?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I've been shooting well in the gym this last week. You know, as much time as I took off of not getting in a gym and not being in a basketball setting, it feels pretty good, man.
Who's been in there, like, on the opposite courts while you've been in there? Do you have a set schedule where it's always you and somebody else?
Yeah, we got a set schedule. I've been working with Miles Simon, one of our player development guys, and then in the weight room with Gunnar Peterson, one of our strength coaches who's mainly been working me out the last year or so. And it's 30, 45 minutes one-on-one in the weight room, one-on-one in the court. Duds has been in there. Quinn's been in. Two-way guys, Kosis and Devontae have been in. And then I think Kuz and Keith started showing up this week too. So we're slowly but surely, you know, we're getting back to it.
You got an exercise machine at home? Can you Peloton? Can you do something?
I didn't. I didn't have anything, and that was one of the things that this kind of break it made me realize, is that I don't have the quality, the professional quality workout equipment in my house that I need to withstand something like this. So luckily I got a little care package from the Lakers strength and conditioning program, and they helped me get through it.
I got nothing at home. I have a gym in my building that is closed, and like I'm like taking walks like an old man every day. Like I gotta go out for my walk, you know.
My parents are big walkers. I'm sure they're the only people in the country that are excited about everybody not being able to work out and having to take walks.
Walking. So I mean, I assume you are paying attention to all the debates and discussions about what the NBA is going to be if and when it comes back in Orlando, all the different formats, just the playoff teams go straight to the playoffs, these crazy play-in tournaments. Have you seen the World Cup one, the groups? I mean, you're a soccer guy, so this is we're speaking your language. Have you seen that one?
I've seen it all. I don't know if I really have an opinion on which one I like versus dislike, as long as one of them happens. You know, I think that's the biggest thing for me, is that we just get it done and safely, of course, get everybody back to playing. But yeah, the world, I mean, that was an interesting one. And then I've seen the like last four teams in the West plus the 16 playoff teams, seeded 1 through 20, and playing off a couple games to finish the regular season. So yeah, I've heard them all, seen them all. All of them sound good to me, as long as we're back and playing.
You really don't care. You just want to play.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's really what it boils down to. And that might be naive of me. That might be overconfident, but I just feel like, we'll be ready, and I feel like we can play with anybody. So doesn't really matter who we play.
The World Cup one, the objection to the one that, that's the one that is the most controversial, I think, inside teams for two reasons. Number one, it's so different from anything that the NBA has ever done that people are like, there's already going to be an asterisk on this season. Let's not make it gimmicky. And number two, and I'm interested to see your take on this. So we put all these teams in a group. Let's say we bring back 20 teams. So Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, the Spurs are coming back. Mm-hmm. And we essentially give those teams some chance to get into like what becomes the second round of the playoffs, because eight teams advance out of that. And there was some feeling like, boy, that kind of devalues the regular season if those teams can suddenly be in the final eight and like steal a spot. Does that hold any water to you?
Yeah, I think that's kind of along the right terms of discrediting some of the regular season, you know. And I think obviously it discredits the guys that are at the top, like some of the leaders in the West and some of the leaders in the East who have played so well. And, you know, you always want to reward it with seeding. And I'm honestly, the seeding is usually it's fairly accurate as far as like who moves on to the second round most years. You know, it's not like March Madness where there's a bunch of upsets every year. So yeah, in a sense, it does kind of discredit the regular season. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, this is such a crazy event that we're being, event in times of the world. Like nobody knew this was happening. So there's no real right answer, you know? And I think that kind of goes back to why I don't really care how we do it as long as we just do it. You know, it's no offense to those teams that aren't in the playoffs, those last four teams or the guys at the end, but I'm confident in my team and my abilities to go out there and win games.
Those teams are not allowed to be offended anyway. They don't get the right to be offended. Without naming names, obviously, do you know anyone do you know any players, or I guess even beyond that, who are scared to go into the bubble, who are scared to play and bang against each other and sweat and all that, or to the point that they would consider maybe not going? Have you had that discussion, not even just with teammates, but with players around the league?
Yeah, I haven't reached out too much to people around the league. If I've talked to anybody at all, it's been within my team and my organization. But I don't have a sense that that's a big fear. And obviously, there's a lot of science and there's a lot of health regulations that go into it. But we're some of the most healthy human beings on the planet. We're some of the most in shape human beings on the planet. And obviously, it's case by case. And you knock on wood that everybody stays healthy and nothing bad happens. But at the end of the day, I feel pretty confident that I wouldn't lose my life, you know, to the extreme that this has gotten with the pandemic. I don't feel like I would lose my life if I got it or played against somebody that did. So, that's one of the many, many questions that goes into this whole restart, is about the safety and about the concerns of the players. And on my end, and at least the people I've talked to, it's not too much of a concern.
Are you hearing, obviously LeBron is very close friends with Chris Paul, who's the president of the players union. So do you feel like by 2 degrees away, you're plugged into the discussions? Like, do you feel like you know what format has momentum or what's going to happen? Or are you not sort of hearing all that filter down?
No, I mean, it's not really like a grapevine, passing rumors through the heads down to the lower level players. I hear everything that y'all hear, via Shams or Woj, and it usually gets out before our player association can get to us, but they've been doing a good job of keeping us up to date and just keeping it straightforward with us, you know, telling us what it is and not sugarcoating it. And it's been great for us, you know, as the players, obviously we have so many questions, and like we said, there's so many different routes that can be taken to getting back into the gameplay. So, unfortunately, I don't have the plug straight to the source of all the meetings.
You do if you want. You could.
I might be able to. I might be able to.
You can get Chris Paul's phone number. I'm confident in that.
I'm confident I could. I'm not confident I want to, though. I think I'm going to let them handle all the pressure and the stress that comes with doing that without Alex Caruso bearing down their neck asking questions.
So what are you curious about the bubble then? Like, when you talk about it with your family, when you talk about it with your teammates, like, what mechanically are you curious about? Like, how is it, like, I how is it going to work? Like, what kind of questions do you find yourself having?
I mean, just the basic stuff, you know, like what is the restrictions going to look like? Like, what does it include? Are we going to be like straight hotel room, get on the team bus, check your health, practice, get back and be on lockdown? Is it going to be allowed to have family at all? Are we going to be allowed to have immediate family? And some people's immediate family is a lot larger. Like mine, I have two sisters, a mom and dad, and, sister has a fiance, so maybe he could come, but like I know there's people who have larger immediate families with cousins or with aunts and uncles that live with them or grandparents that live with them. So I mean, stuff like that, just figuring out like what the basics of this would look like, because when you say go into a bubble and play the games out, it sounds pretty straightforward in theory, but there are so many like minuscule details that go into that like food, where are we going to get our food from? Are we going to have our team chefs come in and provide food for our team? Are we going to have a company come in and cater everything for the 2 months, 3 months, whatever the timeline is? You know, there's so many questions up in the air, and that's why another reason I don't need Chris Paul's number. I need to ask him all these questions because I'm sure he's got enough people asking him.
These are like it's going to be really complicated, and I think that's one of the reasons people are starting to get frustrated with it's almost June. We don't know if yet. I mean, it appears that yes, yeah, you are coming back, but it's not like set in stone. And if something bad happens in the Bundesliga or some of the other leagues that are coming back before you guys, or if something bad happens with the virus, that could change things. But let's just, and we don't know how, but I think one of the reasons we don't is the NBA, to their credit, is taking every little step incredibly seriously. Like, I know they've thought of things that you and I have not thought about. Like, what if Jeannie Buss wants to come to a game? She doesn't want to live in the bubble for 3 months. What if she wants to come to a game? They've got that planned out. Like, how is that going to work if an owner wants to come in and leave? Where do they sit? How do they get in? Like, there's just a million variables that they've thought of, and that they're trying to think of. So it's taking a while. Are you getting frustrated? Are the players, do you sense the players are getting frustrated?
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's some type of frustration after being gone over 2 months now, right? A little over 2 months, especially teams that were title chasing and teams that were in position to make playoff runs and contend for a championship. So obviously there's always just a little frustration with the unknown and stuff being not normal as far as scheduling and timeline and taking a 2 month break in the second half of the season gearing up for playoffs. But I mean, for me personally, I'm such a big, like, roll with the punches, just like make whatever situation the best out of it that I can. That for me, I'm just kind of focusing on what I can do to improve and be ready to go when we get back, you know. And that's so hard to do given the circumstances that we talked about, right? At home gyms, not being able to touch a basketball for 2 weeks, you know, different things like that. But the frustration level, I think, won't boil over or be at a tipping point until they tell us that we can't play basketball for the remainder of the season, I think.
Let's hope. I want to say let's hope that doesn't happen because
I mean, we're optimistic, right? Bundesliga starts back up. Premier League got voted to resume play. Serie A and Italy is going to try and.
I'm glad you said it because I don't know if I'm supposed to say Serie A or Serie A. So you just said both, I don't know.
Like, yeah, it's like the American version of saying it. It's whatever you want to say. You know, we say stuff differently than they do.
We say it wrong. The wrong version.
Yeah, we say it the American way. It's usually not right. But like all those things coming back, you know, it just provides optimism for me that somehow we're going to get this done.
Maybe that can be the new slogan for our country. The American way, it's usually not right. Like, you can see that at the airport when you come in the internet.
Things, it might need to be the official tagline.
Here's a fun, let's make a fun quarantine question. What, have you picked up any good habits as a result of the pandemic and quarantining? Have you dropped a bad habit or picked up a good habit?
I would say the one thing that I've done better is I'm reading more. You know, I like we talked about playing video games and doing all that. That was great, and I think I'm coming to the realization that I can only do that for so long. And during the year, it's easy because I only have like an hour or two here or there each day or every other day to connect with my friends back home and play. But when you have 12 hours out of the day where you're not doing much and you can fill it with whatever, you get burnt out pretty quick. So I've started reading some books, and I think that's probably the biggest thing for me is like I'm realizing that outside of basketball, I need to find a hobby.
Give me an Alex Caruso book club recommendation.
Guy named Jesse Itzler. I'm pretty sure he might be.
He's part owner of the Hawks.
Part owner of the Hawks. I met him at a game in Atlanta. He was sitting courtside with his kids, and I had heard his story about living with David Goggins. Anybody doesn't know David Goggins?
This is the Navy SEAL book. This
Navy
is living
SEAL
with.
Book. Yep. So I told him, I was like, hey, man, I love that story. I love what you're about, da-da-da. One of our strength coaches who knows everybody knew him, hooked me up with him, and he sent me his two books, Living with the Seal and then Living with Monks. I've read those twice each, and they've been great. They're real, like, self-fulfillment, realizing potential, and just kind of navigating the human mind, you know, really. And I don't think he meant it for athletes. I think it's a broader spectrum of just people in general, but it's been great for me to apply it to that and then outside of basketball as well.
Reading is a good habit.
Yeah, reading it is a good habit. I always liked reading when I was a kid. I just didn't like doing it when they told me to. You know, like whenever they assigned a book, I was like, I don't really like. It's one of those things. It's like when you can't have it, you want it a little more. But when there's an abundance of it, you kind of shy away from it. So there's like, yeah, here's this book. It's great. Read it. I'm like, I don't know.
So do you have a book in your mind that is the symbol of reading by mandate? That is the symbol of like when you just were done listening to your teachers and you cannot read this book? Because I do. Do you have a book in your mind that's like, I can't do it?
There's two books that I remember vividly from I think it was high school. I think high school was where it was. It was the I don't even remember the titles now, but it was the one about pigs. The
Animal Farm.
What was that again?
Don't tell me you put down Animal Farm.
It might have been Animal Farm.
George Orwell, Animal Farm. The whole farm is an allegory for like governmental structures. You put that one down.
I'm gonna have to end the podcast now. It was like a bunch of people had to like survive on the island, and they like
Lord of the Flies.
Might have been Lord of the Flies.
With a character named Piggy.
Yeah, that was it.
Who gets smashed by a rock. So humans descending into madness could not hold your interest. Children descending into madness could not hold your interest.
Like I said, great books, but I just, you know, I was told to do it, so I was like kind of rebellious. I was like, nah, I don't know if that's what I want to do.
What was the other one?
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Boy, oh boy.
I know.
The Caruso has taken a hit so far in this podcast.
American high school classics.
Mine was Madame Bovary, was the book where a junior in high school, I was like, I can't do it. It was the first book, because I was a nerd. It was the first book I was like, screw it. I'm just not reading the book. Don't ever read. Well, maybe it's good. I don't know. I was dumb in 15. Maybe it's really good.
I don't want to date you here. Did they have Cliff Notes when you were?
Cliff's Notes. Yes, they had Cliff's Notes, and they had Spark Notes as well. Okay. Never use the Cliff Notes. If I'm not going to read the book, I'm just not going to read it.
So you just, any paper or quiz or anything, you're just like, not worth it.
The only class I really blew off was my AP English class when I was a senior in high school. I just checked out.
I don't think I took AP English. I took maybe AP History and AP Stats, but I couldn't do English. English was never my strong suit.
The only book I read was Huck Finn, and then the AP exam, the question, like the main essay question, was about like name a book about race relations in America. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, I win. I read one book and it's the perfect book for this. Okay. By the way, you dapped up Jesse Itzler and you did not dap up Rihanna, which is a promise that you have, something you have promised to rectify.
Jesse's probably a little more approachable.
She was right there for you. That's all I'm saying. She was right. If people haven't seen the clip, I assume people have seen the clip. So you've promised to rectify this next time though.
Yeah, I'm going to try my best. Hopefully she acknowledges me. If not, it'll just be another chink in the armor and we keep it moving.
Have you dapped up Jack Nicholson?
No, I have not. I don't know.
I think he's been to a couple games this year.
Yeah, I think he has. I don't know, man. I get so, like, especially playing in L.A., there's always stars there. There's always celebrities that it kind of – I don't want to say it's watered it down because obviously it's really cool to play in front of those people, but – I'm so focused on basketball when I'm out there. Like, if I don't focus on basketball and I just kind of like have fun out there and like look around at people, I'm gonna get trashed. I'm gonna get blown by, give up a bunch of points, turn the ball over. So I usually have to be pretty focused.
So your introduction to the NBA fandom at large was during a December 2017 game for the Lakers when you got in, and Charles Barkley and Shaq decided to have some fun at your expense during watching highlights, said you were Ernie Johnson. They called you Ernie.
For a living, yeah.
They called you Ernie. Ernie. Okay. Oh, Ernie, you're out there on the court. Have they since apologized to you for this? That was a baptism by fire on Inside the NBA. Have they ever come up to you and said, hey man, I'm sorry, that was not very nice?
I think there's worse people compared to. Ernie's a great person, great human being. So
Ernie's a legend.
I take that as a compliment, maybe backhanded, but compliment nonetheless. No, I mean, that's just, they have not apologized, but I don't think it warrants an apology. I think that comes with the territory. You know, hopefully I get good enough and I can go on the show sometime and we can exchange some verbal jokes and hash it out a little bit. That comes with the territory.
Well, the territory is—it's well known at this point that, you know, just like Alex Crusoe looks kind of like a guy you would see, you know, the Woody Harrelson in White Men Can't Jump kind of thing. Like you would see this guy on the street. I feel like you've leaned into that instead of leaning away from it. So I was talking to someone at your agency, Wasserman, who said, you know, I remember when he came in for you guys do a little pre-draft thing where all the Wasserman incoming draftees come in, that there were players who were like, who is that guy? Or there were people even in the agency, I think, like interns who were like, is that guy, is he a new intern? Is he on staff? who's that guy? Does this still happen to you? Have you gone into NBA arenas and like security is like, sir, you can't go there. Have you ever been mistaken for a non-player? In an NBA arena by like security.
I want to say it's happened maybe for sure once where they had to like kind of take a double take. I think they just maybe hadn't had their coffee yet for their second wind of the shift. Cause I'm wearing Lakers gear. I'm going to have basketball shoes on. It's like, I can only look so much like a normal person when I'm wearing that walking around the gym when there's a basketball game coming up. I think that happened once, but no, man, I mean, with the craze of social media and how much exposure there is, most people know who I am. Whether they acknowledge it or not, they kind of know, especially in the basketball. I mean, there's times, there'll be times when we're out in public. I'm trying to think, oh man, I wish I had a good story because I know it's happened before where someone was like, this is, like Laker official or something like that. And I was like, yep, I play on the team. But I can't remember when it happened, man. If I come up with it, I'll reach out to you and let you know. But it's definitely happened, maybe not as much this year, but definitely on the two-way years especially because I wasn't with him the whole time.
So have you seen the clip of John Stockton in Barcelona during the Olympics being up? That's what I think of.
The and the fam, yeah.
So in my head, I don't even want to look up that photo again. In my head, he's wearing a t-shirt tucked into shorts and a fanny pack. That's how I remember. That's how that clip is aged in my head.
That's the style's back. That's fashion is like a cyclical thing. You know, everybody's wearing the fanny packs and the shoulder bags now. It's coming back into fruition.
Yeah, but they're probably doing it ironically to sneer back at the 80s and the early 90s.
There's a good bit of the culture now that wears the fanny packs or the sling bags.
Who's the trendiest Laker?
By trendiest, you mean best dresser? Best dresser's tough. I've been asked this a couple of times by some different people. We have a bunch of guys that dress really well. And it's like different kinds of fashion too. Like Bron obviously has unlimited access and resources to dress very well. He does a good job. Duds does a good job. Kuz usually does a good job. There's really not, I mean.
Oh yeah. Kuz is probably the answer.
Yeah. Kuz gets a little wild, but that's, I mean, he's the young guy. That's like kind of his, that's kind of what he's supposed to do. All the other guys are like not from this era really of like fashion and making it a thing to come in an arena. So they all have a little quieter taste. But Kuz does his best to keep it fresh.
So my pet theory is that you have leaned into the, I look like the guy off the street thing. You have not restyled your hair. You have not done any of that, that you've leaned into it because it's sort of your version of like how Bill Russell used to be friends with the people he was about to face just to soften them up. I feel like you like being underestimated. Like it's going to wear off soon because you're becoming too well known, but you like other players seeing you and say, oh, that guy's, I don't have to worry too much about him. That's my theory. Is there any truth to my theory?
I don't know if that's the driving force. I think it gets a little deeper than that as far as just like my view on life and in the world and how I'm very just, you know, there's so many more important things than what someone looks like and stuff like that. But that's a different road. The unassuming look on the court, I think is just always just played to my favor. You know, I remember cause I've always been the athletic white guy that's ran through passes and dunked on people or caught a tip dunk in AAU to college to G League and now. So, it's always just kind of been my thing. And I don't know if I've like intentionally preyed upon people that are like, yeah, this person's going to underestimate me, but it's definitely played in my favor to where people don't give me their best shot the first couple of times we go up and down the court. But soon thereafter, they realize that I'm here for one reason, and that's to get after it.
Well, you, someone who shall not be named from the South Bay Lakers, the G League team of the Lakers, told me as you guys were, did you guys win one year when you were there?
Win the whole thing?
The G League, or no?
No. We made a deep playoff run. We went to the conference finals.
There was talk during that playoff run of Alex, if we win, if we get to a certain amount of wins, if we do X, will you please cut your hair? Will you please cut your hair? This was a discussion. Do you recall this discussion? This is what I've heard.
I don't think it was if we win
there was some encouragement is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, there's always encouragement. I mean, there's been endless amounts of encouragement and jokes with it, but I mean, at the end of the day, I'm going to do what I want to do. You know, and I'm not going to leave it up to us winning something for me to make a decision on how I dress or how I cut my hair or how I talk. You know, I'm going to be me.
I like that you lean into it. Vogel told me a good story. Vogel told me he gets the Lakers job and he calls all the players. He's calling everybody. And then he arrives in L.A. and maybe it's like early summer. People are filtering in the gym and he sees Rondo. Who plays, you know, similar, you're kind of more of a combo guard, point guard, whatever, than a traditional point guard to me, but guy who's going to compete with you for some minutes. He sees Rondo. Oh my God, Rajon Rondo, what's up, Doe? Big hug. Just blows right by you. Hasn't actually said hello to you yet. Blows by you. And you pop over there. Hey, coach. Hey, I'm over here. And and he said it's because I had seen Alex, I think already, and I hadn't seen physically Rondo, but you played it up as like, oh, there's a X time all star and just blow right by me, coach.
So that's kind of my personality, man. I'm very, I'm a sarcastic joker. That's probably partially why our team gets along so well this year is we have a bunch of guys that can kind of give each other a little bit of a hard time, but it's all good-hearted, and yeah, that was my – I think I remember that happening because I think I was sitting down in a chair against the wall after a workout or between runs, and coach comes down, and he says the guy's standing up, and they're all on, like, the side of the court, so he's going over to say hello. And he's – you know how Frank is. He's very, very loving guy, very very good with cultivating relationships and being present for his team. So – he's going around saying hello to everybody, like, oh, what's up, da 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 da. He's like, Rondo. And I think it was the first time he saw him. And then I'm just being my normal sarcastic self. I'm like, what's up, coach? How you doing? Alex over here.
Alex Caruso, guard.
Player, yeah. Point guard, shooting guard, basketball player.
So what seems like 10 years ago, we did an episode of The Jump from Lakers Media Day. And we had you on. I insisted that we get you on. It's true. I told Rachel, it's like everyone got to pick one player. I said Caruso. Who's got me? LeBron, obvious. Like anyone could pick LeBron.
Yeah, you heard enough from him.
And I said on the show, I know it's cute. All the memes are cute, and the drug test/ Instagram photo had happened by then. It's like fun and all the Ernie stuff. It's like, this guy's good. Like the Lakers are actually going to need him to win. At some point, we're going to have to start talking about him as a basketball player. So my question to you is, do you feel like this is the year, you know, you've earned a rotation spot, you have a good chemistry with Bron, we'll talk more about that later, but do you feel like this is the year where you've sort of surpassed that initial phase of like, oh, this is kind of a fun story, we'll make some memes and clips and all that, and like, no, I'm here. Are you almost tired of that first kind of discourse and ready for another kind?
Yeah, you know, it's a fine line between like joking about it and people having fun with it, and then people kind of disrespecting how hard I've worked to get to this point, right? Like, because we talked about it, and I remember the interview, and I remember sitting next to RJ, and I was like, I'm a professional basketball player, like this is what I do. Like, they didn't just give me a 2-year contract because I threw a ball in the hoop one time and dunked one time and everybody got excited on Instagram or Twitter. It's like, I've put in my time. I've worked on my game, my body, my craft to be able to get to this point. And it's like I said, it's a fine line between having real fans that appreciate what I do and know how hard I play and what I actually bring to the game. And then there's another group who, the new word is called casuals. That's what everybody calls somebody who doesn't have a educated basketball take whenever they come in with something like, oh, you must be a casual. I've realized that. I'm learning the lingo. then there's a bunch of casuals who, one, either don't like it because all they see is videos of me on Bleacher Report or House of Highlights or SportsCenter, which they probably do play too many times a month. They probably are overproducing Alex Caruso content. But then there's the other half that are like loyal fans that like appreciate how hard I've worked. And I've had so many people reach out to me, and obviously I can't respond to everybody on Twitter or Instagram, but people who actually tell me is like, hey man, I recognize what you do. Like you work hard. You've earned this. Like I appreciate you. You're inspiring to me to do that. And I'm like, I can't knock one side and get mad at the people who just think it's like it's overkill or I'm just here for fun, because there is a side who truly believe in me and truly appreciate what I've done to get here, and those people obviously are who I play for, right? I love playing for fans. I love playing in crowds that get excited. It gives me juice and energy to play. So I love when there's genuine appreciation. And like you said, I don't know if this is going to be the year that people decide to stop talking about me. I'm sure, being on the Lakers helps this a lot. And maybe somewhere down the line in my career, I won't be a Laker, but for the time being, I know it's not going to slow down just because of how much, exposure there is with the brand of being a Laker. And I'm not going to slow down. There's not going to be any loose ends on my end.
Well, when I talk to people about you, there's a certain mentality you have that I think that this is what I've heard that has served you well in going from undrafted to here,
mm-hmm.
but also in playing with LeBron James, which is not easy to do, to be LeBron James' teammate. Like it's pressure. There's a certain amount of pressure. There's a certain amount of pressure, but you're not in awe of the Lakers. You're not in awe of the NBA. There's a certain even keel about you that people say, people around you said, you know, when you went undrafted or were you on a two-way deal and you went back and forth a million times, like there could have been a certain frustration level, a certain, you know, some people in all walks of life tend to lash out and blame other people or be angry mm-hmm. about it. And you never were. And the flip side of that is certain people might going from undrafted to playing with LeBron on a championship contender might be awed a little bit by that environment. And people say you're not. In fact, a couple people told me he's one of the louder guys in our film sessions, and not loud in criticizing other players or what, yeah. but loud in saying, hey, I have a question about this, or can we get this scheme right? Is that true that you're one of the big voices in there?
Yeah, I don't know about big voices, but when I see something that I think is important, I'm going to say something, you know, and it's never a negative thing. I never want to embarrass a teammate or do anything like that. And I think that's come from learning from past coaches that I've had of doing a good job of that. But when I see something important that I think our guys need to make sure they visually see to help us be a better team, I'm going to say it, you know, and it kind of goes back to that. I've always been somewhat of like the leading type, with my G League team. I was one of the leaders on that team with A&M teams. I was one of the leaders on that team, my high school team. I was the leader of that team. It just comes naturally to me to speak and to be vocal. And I'm blessed to be able to have that ability, because I know not a lot of people do. There's a lot of people who lead by example and can't vocally lead, but it goes back to the mentality you talked about of going undrafted, going through the G League and then becoming an NBA player. It's like, if I don't have confidence in myself and I don't hold myself to a high standard, I'm not going to meet everybody else's, right? So like, why don't I hold myself to a standard that's higher than everybody else's? So when the time comes that they would have me a question or I have to answer a bell of their expectations, it's like, I'm good. Like I hold myself to the standard already. I don't have to worry about what I'm going to do when you ask me or I'm called upon in your spot or something like that. You know, I'm a big, big believer in just working hard, and I'm going to get the job done. I'm not, if something goes wrong, I'm not going to be like, oh man, that's why we're going to lose, or that's why we're going to do this. It's like, all right, that happened. Let's get to this next play. I'm going to make up for it. I'm going to do something else to change the course of the game. And that served me well. You know, it serves me well in a sense of filling a need that a lot of teams have, you know, as far as a guy that's gritty and a guy that'll do anything to win.
Well, I think it's probably one of the reasons why LeBron has an affection for you. And I know he said some nice things about you publicly, you know, but teammates say nice things about their teammates to the media a lot. It's something you should do. But I've also heard he sent some things to you privately, text messages, you know, stuff just like stuff that's indicating that the public words are real. Like he's sent you messages indicating he enjoys playing with you, stuff like that, right?
Well, nothing too deep, you know, on texts and stuff like that. But I mean, there's just people talk about our plus minus and our connection on the court. And over the last year or so, I've really our relationship has gotten good to where I can ask him anything, and he trusts that I'm going to be able to do whatever it is that needs to be done. And I think that's the biggest thing with Bron, is just earning his trust, that he knows what he's going to get out of you, and he can count on that. You know, because at the end of the day, every time LeBron plays in the NBA, every game, every season is for one goal. It's to win a championship. He's not out there for any other reason. And for me, I'm trying to win every game I play. And at the end of the day, if that ends up being the championship, then that's what it's going to be. And I think he appreciates that. And then obviously just getting to know him off the court, you know, that's been one of the great things about this team this year is I've gotten to, I mean, my relationship with everyone in the team has improved so much from when we first met and had a little, mini camp in Vegas as a team to now. You know, I can text anybody and ask them a question. I was talking to Duds about the implications of this break and monetarily what it's going to be for us and the CBA and stuff. And I don't know if I would have been comfortable doing that back in October, September. So, you know, just being able to get a relationship with him has really helped me just kind of find my way and understand what it is I need to do.
Did it get you into Space Jam 2?
No, unfortunately, there will not be a AC Fresh cameo in Space Jam 2.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I know. Maybe if it was a couple years from now, I would have got the call, but I'll save that.
Well, you guys, I was going to talk about this later. Might as well do it now. I mean, you talked about the bonding of the team. I mean, I don't say this lightly or facetiously. You guys have had a year, unlike any other team probably ever. And we don't have to talk about the darkest parts of the year. We know what they are. Everyone is still recovering from that. But from the moment you took off for China and landed in China, it has just been a nonstop. It's just not even been a basketball season. It's been something completely different than that. So what do you remember about landing in China? Like, does everyone turn on their phone and immediately it's like, whoa, our trip just changed? Or do you not know till you get back to the hotel and absorb it? Like, what do you remember from that?
I'm trying to remember the timing of how all that stuff went down. Did it come out? Did Daryl Morey tweet out that whatever he said? Was it while we were in transit?
The clips that I was rereading today suggested we took off and didn't know anything had happened. Okay. And then we landed, and then we
foggy. Like you said, it's been a long year. I mean, I remember getting there and just not, like, there were so many questions. You know, we had so many events planned. There was dinners that were supposed to happen. There was Special Olympics camps for kids over there that were supposed to happen. Let alone the games. You know, the games are good for us to kind of get back to basketball, but just like so many events that would have been positive for us to do with the people over there, the people who care about basketball and are fans of the NBA and sports. There was just a lot of unknown stuff. You know, it's a lot like now. It's like we didn't know anything until we were told it. And that's
and probably cool. You spent a lot of time in a hotel.
Oh no, we spent the entire time in the hotel. But we didn't practice. There was no shoot arounds, I believe. We spent a vast majority of our time in the hotel, which was a really nice hotel. So I'm not complaining. It's not like it was a Motel 6. You know, we were in a very nice spot with a nice view of the city, but Yeah, man. Just especially you had wives, girlfriends, families, kids, like on the trip, and it was like all of a sudden it was like, well, we just gonna hang out in the hotel and see how it goes.
How'd you pass the time? I know there were card games. Who was your China crew?
I was hanging out with a girlfriend at the time, and really just trying to figure out anything to do. You know, the players, we would meet for lunch, and lunch would be like an hour and a half because we're sitting down there ordering as much fried rice from the people as we can to keep us hungry or to keep us fed and not hungry. So it was a lot of sitting around, but it was good. You know, it like you said, the bonding through that was almost beneficial for us, you know, because if you just go through a normal trip, you're probably not talking as much as we did. You're probably not with each other as much as we were, just because of different appearances and different things you had to do. So it was, I mean, like I said, you can always look at the negatives of situations, or you can just take the best out of what it is and kind of roll with the punches. And I think that's what we did. I think we did a really good job of it, us and the Nets, of coping with the situation.
The symbolism of the symbolic event from that trip was when they started taking the banners down. Was there a Caruso banner?
No, there was not a Caruso banner. I'm not that important.
Well, sometimes they have everybody. You go to every arena now, they have a banner that shows all the players.
No, it was like Kyrie, KD, DeAndre, Bron, AD. I think Danny might have been up, or no, Danny or Rondo. They both have connections over in China for many years. But yeah, it's a funny story. We were, it was the day before the game, day before the first game in Shanghai, and we're in lunch. I think it was a Thursday, like midday. And it's in this big kind of, it's not a huge ballroom, but it's a ballroom of sorts with whole windows on a 90 degree turn. So like one flat end, one long end, if it's a rectangular room. And the long end of it had the windows open, and that's where we could see the big banner with the NBA and all the sponsors and the players. And they started taking it down while we're eating our meals. And it was something I'll never forget. I was like, well, this is okay. We at that point, we didn't think we were playing any games. We're like, well, okay, well, we just flew over here to hang out, and we're gonna fly home now.
Hey.
Middle of lunch, they're taking down our banners. We're like, oh, that's not good.
What do you remember about the draft when you were not drafted? Because like I looked back on it, it was like you had hopes of being drafted. It wasn't like you knew you were going to be undrafted. So when pick number 60 comes and it's not you, what happens? Who are you with, and what happens immediately after that?
I was hanging out with my immediate family, and then like six of my like closest friends. We were just hanging out. You know, we knew I wasn't going to go in the first round. We knew that wasn't a thing. If I was going to get picked, it was going to be middle of second, late second, and it was going to be somebody who needed a bunch of guards, right? I think Brooklyn was maybe one of the teams, maybe Cleveland, maybe a couple others, but things were going to have to fall into place for it to get done. But I'm young, I'm naive, so I'm like, all right, well, I might actually get my name called. I was like, oh, that'd be pretty cool. And I'm texting my agent Greg, and I'm trying to figure everything out on draft night. And then last pick comes, and I don't get picked. And the emotions that I went through, I was like, even knowing I wasn't locked to get drafted, and the guys who I worked out for that I did well in that might be interested didn't pick me. I was still a little disappointed, you know, almost a little embarrassed, just because I had always been like, that I had never failed in basketball before. And technically that was like a failure for me. I was like, I had got invited to all the camps when I was in high school. I was an all state player. I got to go to A&M, set records at A&M, won stuff. And so like every time I had played basketball, I had won, or I had graduated to the next step. And, for that not to happen, it was almost like the first time in my life where I kind of had like a reset button. And I was like, okay, well, if I'm gonna actually do this, I'm gonna have to get after it. Like, there's more dedication I need to put into this. So, I think I'm not gonna change, you know, the butterfly effect of life. You know, you change an event and it could change everything. So I take every day like it's going to be my last. I try to do the most I can and work as hard as I can now. And it's gotten me to this point, and I've made some great relationships through the G League and through the two way. And then even my first year in OKC with players, with coaches, with front office people that just appreciated what I'm about, which is showing up, working hard and trying to get the job done. And it's gotten me this far, and I think it's going to continue to push me for the rest of my career.
I think it helped you this past summer because obviously you go on a late run late last season, and LeBron's hurt, team's not playing for anything. And you know the questions that swirl. And I think the questions even swirled inside the Lakers organization. Like, was any of this real? Was this just sort of like late season, half the teams are tanking? Like, is this Alex Caruso thing real? Like, should we, you know, you're a restricted free agent. You hung out in the market for a little bit. I think the Lakers were, I think the Lakers and a lot of people were curious, like, was that actually a real thing that happened? Eh, we're not sure. But I know your G League guys, I know the front office guys and the coaches on your G League team were going to bat for you and saying, damn right it was real. We need to get this guy back on the team. Are you aware that kind of conversation was happening?
Maybe not directly, but I know who the guys are that are in my corner. You know, I know the relationships I have with the South Bay front office, and I knew what they saw in me just from when they decided to. I'm gonna throw some background information in this. I never worked out for the Lakers in my career. I've never done a pre-draft workout. I've never done a free agent workout. The only time that I was exposed to the South Bay Lakers scouting department was when we played the Defenders my first year, and then at the G League Elite Showcase after my first year.
We're gonna talk about now your first year. When you say that, for people who don't know, you're playing with the Oklahoma City G League team, the Blue.
Straight G League, no two way before two ways existed. Yeah. And they kind of took it. They didn't take a chance on me because obviously I played well and I was performing, but they took a small picture of what I was. And then over the 2 years of getting to know me and realizing who I was and what I was about, and then obviously the performances on the court, those guys, I mean, I owe them as much as I do to anybody to giving me the chance and then allowing me to grow and them being such a great organization of as far as South Bay goes, of just cultivating like actual culture within a G League team, which is really, really hard to do. It benefited me greatly. And I have no doubt that when you tell me they went to bat for me, that they did their best. And obviously it was meant to be.
Well, you mentioned it just now. If there, you are an example of when your moment comes, be ready for it. Because there are two moments that stand out in you transitioning from guy in the G League to guy making X millions of dollars for the Lakers. The one moment you just mentioned is the G League Elite camp or event, where they took the best players from the G League and there's some games and blah, blah, blah. And I even remember getting text messages like, whoa, do you know anything about this Alex Caruso dude? So I have no idea what happened at that camp, but you played really, really well. The second event is, and I had forgotten that you were like a supporting player in this event.
I don't want to cut you off, but
cut me off.
To my credit, it wasn't anything outside of what I do. You know, I was being a vocal point guard. I was standing for my teammates when they came out. Like I'm doing everything I do right now with the Lakers. I'm doing with them. Plus a little bit more involvement with the ball and making decisions and scoring. And I think that people, when they saw me playing games or they watched it on Facebook Live when our G League games were broadcasted there, they don't get that. Like, you don't get to see me coaching guys on the team or putting the guys in positions or telling, like, patting a guy on the butt and telling them it's all right, like, let's get this next one and refocusing the group. They just kind of see the play for itself. So I think that really helped me. I think people didn't know that's something that I had.
Do you know what the second moment is that I'm going to bring up?
I don't think I do.
So
I mean, I've had a bunch of moments in my kind of.
No, the moments that turned it to like, okay, this guy's a player that we need to pay attention to. So the second one.
Was it the Clippers game?
No. The second one that was, and I had forgotten you were a supporting player in this thing, in this drama, was when Lonzo Ball in 2017 Summer League sat out a game against the Kings, and there was like, Lonzo's ducking De'Aaron Fox. But that was your chance, right? And I think the Lakers signed you to a two-way, like, the day after that game, because you played really well.
Day after in the hotel lobby. Yeah. 22nd floor in Mandarin, Mandarin Oriental Hotel. I remember it to this day. Yeah, that was, I forgot, that was a good point. That was, that kind of, because I got invited, like you said, I got invited to be Lonzo's point guard. And at this point, I'm having conversations with my agent where it's like, I just need a chance to get out there and like compete against these guys. Because it had been a year since I had done the whole summer league and G League thing. And I knew that summer league was a little bit better than the G League talent. As far as like, you get the drafted players, you get that. It's a little more chaotic. It's a little less structured. But as far as pure talent goes, the summer leagues are usually a little bit better than the G League straight up. And I knew that if I went out there and played well, and I played well against the guys, I was going to have a shot at being somewhere next year. And, yeah, like you said, Zoe got hurt. They told me, I think the morning of, that he wasn't going to be able to go and that I was going to start. And, man, from there, I just went out and I played my game. You know, I that was one of the things when I learned through my first year in the G League, in that top 50, that G League showcase thing, is that like, I'm capable of doing some things that I didn't get the chance to do, or I was just too timid to do in college because I was trying to follow the rules and set the plays up and be a point guard, but it wasn't really being a point guard professionally. So that game and then the rest of that tournament when we went on to win it, it really just solidified that this dude has a level of talent that I think people didn't know.
That game mattered. I mean, as silly as it sounds, that game mattered.
I still watch every now and then. I'll go back and watch the summer league highlights from that summer. And I had a couple plays in there. I was like, oh, those are kind of nice.
Well, and you defended Fox, I think, for a lot of that game. And I'm doing my. I mean, I know you're a good defensive player. I watch enough games. I know you can play good defense. But I'm doing my all defense teams right now. You know, we get two teams, four guards combined between the two teams. And I do everything. You know, I watch a lot of games. I'm looking at every stat there is, every advanced stat. And your name keeps coming up in the top of like, pick your advanced stat, make up an acronym. And like, whatever that stat is, like Alex Caruso is there. And like, something real is happening. And then even the basic stats, I think I looked it up. There were 10 guys in the league this season that averaged two steals per 36 minutes, and you're one of them. It's like something good is happening to the Lakers defense when you are on the floor, and it's showing up. You know, some guys, when you look at these stats, they're good in one, average in another, bad in another, great here. You're just across the board. You're at the top of every one. So you've had the defense has been fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that's always just been, I don't know when it was, maybe it started in high school. It was something that was like, I'm not as athletic as these guys because I got called up to varsity my freshman year of high school, and people see me now and I can jump and I can move and I look like I'm a little stronger now, but I used to be a scrawny white guy in high school and I wasn't dunking like I was then, or like I was now. So I had to figure out ways to affect the game. And that was always something I just had a good anticipation for what the flow of the offense was doing. And then obviously, I mean, getting back to this year, we got a great defensive team in general. So, I mean, obviously my numbers are a product of me working hard and me doing something, but it helps when you have Anthony Davis, JaVale McGee, and Dwight Howard back there protecting the rim.
You said during one of the – well, during this long quarantine we've all had, someone asked you on Twitter if you could pick one show to wipe away from your brain so you could rewatch it again fresh, what would you pick? And you picked The Office – which is a good choice, and The Office is definitely having a little bit of a resurgence right now. What were some of the, first of all, why The Office, and what are the other candidates that popped into your head?
Plain and simple, I just love The Office. I just love the quirkiness, the dry humor. I love how many episodes there were. Steve Carell is great in it. Anybody who has ever told me they don't like The Office has always had a problem with Steve Carell's character. And I'm like, well, that's where you lost it. Like, yeah, thank you. I know.
it's not going to work for you.
I was like, if you don't like that, then you don't like the show. It's like, just keep moving. I don't want to hear any bad mouthing about it, because I think it's the greatest show ever. I don't know. It's always something for me. I'm notorious for not finishing TV shows. I just lose interest. I don't know what it is. Like, even good TV shows, I don't finish them. It just takes too long. Takes too much of my time.
So what's a regret? What's a regret that you?
So many. Y'all are gonna. When people hear this, they're gonna crucify me. Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, Ozark.
So two of those I haven't even started. Breaking Bad, I did all the way through. The other two, although I've heard they're fantastic, I've not tried.
I liked Breaking Bad. I thought it was a good show. I took a week off, and then I was like, I'll just watch some of The Office.
I'm trying to think what my biggest regret is. The show that I started and did. You know what mine is? See, I'm obviously much older than you. Mine is The X-Files. I started The X-Files and dropped The X-Files halfway through for no reason other than like, this
Mad
was like
Man's another one. Never finished that.
Oh,
I know. And I liked it. I thought it was a really good show. I don't know what it is about me.
You're young, man. Finish it now. When you get old and you had a family, you ain't gonna be able to go back and finish these shows. Finish them now. Did you watch Lost? Lost is the show that I never watched one second of that I kind of feel like I might like.
If it's on TV, I'm definitely not gonna watch it.
Okay.
At my schedule, I'm not gonna be able to sit down on Monday at 7 every Monday and watch a show. And I'm not gonna go find it and look and record it. That's just too much work. I watch a lot of sports, man. You know, I've been craving sports for the last 2 months just because I'm not a huge TV guy.
Who is the best supporting character on The Office? Who is the best character that's not I would say the big four are Michael, Dwight, Jim, and Pam. Who's the one that always makes you happy when they appear?
Dang, that's a tough one. Cause they're all so good.
They're all very good.
I'm a big Kevin Malone fan, man.
Love it.
Love Kevin. I'd say Kevin Malone. I think that's my favorite. Him and Creed. Creed's an underrated character. Creed Bratton. Oh, he is so. He doesn't say a lot, but like the one or two times an episode he talks, it's hilarious.
You get the proper dosage of Creed. Too much Creed would be okay. The bit is getting old.
Great supporting humor.
I think Daryl is underrated, or maybe properly rated in it. I just don't know. I think Daryl's a consistent net plus. And I really enjoyed Ryan. When Ryan becomes super successful at the company and gets a goatee and is like a New York executive. I like that guy.
It's funny because BJ Novak was like a main writer on the show.
Yeah.
And I think he produced. I'm not sure. I don't want to speak out of tongue, but I think he helped produce the show as well.
Probably.
And he just like the, I mean, just his character after that, it just makes it even better.
I enjoy Michael's bizarro crush on him. It's just their whole relationship is great.
Everything. It's a great show.
I don't get people who don't like the Steve Carell character because I think it might be.
I think people are just wired differently. Like I love to watch like action and comedy movies over like a horror drama. And there's some people who just like love watching horror films and I just don't understand them. I think that's the thing. I think some people just have their own thing and you just kind of let them roll with it. And it's not going to make The Office any worse or better that they don't like it.
The genius of the Steve Carell character of Michael Scott was that on the whole, he's quite pathetic and insecure. And not super likable. And then every third or fourth episode, he'll do something that shows a great degree of confidence or like competence as a boss. Yeah. And you'll be like, all right, the balance of his character is really hard to strike.
He's the perfect character for it. Like nobody else I think could play that as well as he did.
We got to wrap up, but just let's go quickly back to the Lakers. I have to give you my, if I could wipe shows from my brain, I would wipe The Wire and watch it again. Please tell me you've watched The Wire.
Never seen The Wire.
You know what it is though, right?
I don't. I mean, I've heard people talk about it. I've never.
Am I like 75 years old now compared to NBA players? Is it just all over for me? I don't understand.
I think people still watch The Wire.
I've heard
The Wire before. It's not like I've never heard of it.
I just didn't
get to it.
I think if I had to do it over again with a comedy, I would do 30 Rock. I don't know if 30 Rock hits your.
30 Rock's good. I like Parks and Rec as well.
Parks and Rec is good.
Or parallels.
30 Rock, I watched an episode of on a plane when we were still traveling like a few months ago, and I was like, there's like 20 jokes per minute in that show, and there are just so many great ones that you just don't even hear the first time you watch it. Let's go back to the Lakers. When you guys get back together, how quickly do you think you can get to where you were? Because you had just beaten the Clippers and the Bucks. Like, LeBron was about to make an MVP push. It was all kind of coming together. Yeah. Are you worried that it's going to take a while?
I don't think, because, you know, I think we talk about that weekend and us leading up into that. I think it was more mental than it was physical to get to that point, because it was just about us executing every time down the floor and being diligent about spacing and making the right cuts or right reads off of post-ups and defensive schemes being accurate and executing every time down the floor. So I think getting to that level physically is going to be the hardest part. Just because 60 games, it's hard to replicate that unless you've played 60 games. And I know that sounds like so many games to people, but it actually gets a little easier. I say easier. Obviously I'm not playing 30, 40 minutes a game, but it gets easier to get into that shape of playing games the more you do it. So, I think it's going to be more of a challenge physically to get back to where we were than mentally.
I think one of the things we've lost if we go to the bubble is obviously there's going to be no home court for anybody.
Yeah.
And you were going to have home court advantage. I think one of the things that people were anticipating about the playoffs is if the Lakers get far, Lakers get to the conference finals and they can smell it and the crowd can smell it. We all know what the season has been like for you guys. We all know what happened to your franchise and to your team. Mm-hmm. That the atmosphere in that building was going to be special. And I guess I asked Jared Dudley about this when he came on my podcast. Were you guys ever worried that it was almost going to be too much pressure or extra pressure to deliver if you got that far? To cap the year that all this happened?
You know, we talked about that, obviously, going through the grieving process that we did as a team and an organization and a city. We talked about people are going to try and make this into you're winning the ring for Kobe and doing all that. And that's obviously something we're excited about doing and excited about chasing. But our main focus was going to be doing the things that got us to the point of being prepared to win a championship. And I think having such veteran guys on the team, guys that have been deep in playoff runs, have been in the spotlight, have handled media attention like nobody else has, I think it was going to be okay for us. I say okay because I'm obviously don't know the future, don't know what it would have been, but I think they would have done a good job of having us prepared to show up each time we were ready to play and be ready to play. And there's already so much, you know, pressure. I do pressure in quotation marks. There's so much pressure to just go out and play every day. And that goes back to what we talked about earlier, of holding myself to a standard and our team holding ourselves to a standard that's higher than what the people in the crowd expect of us, what the people in the front office and media expect from us. You know, we expect to be great, and that's kind of what you have to go out and play like. And I think if you do that, everything else just kind of falls into place.
Have you guys talked as teammates, just even in good nature, about the Lakers Clippers becoming a true rivalry and how cool that would be? Or when you're in it, like you're in it, are you all just kind of players playing on basketball teams that are really just big businesses? Like, do you lean into it, or does it not? Is that a fan thing more than a player thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I can't speak for the rest of my team. I'm not sure. We haven't talked about it like that. And I don't want to discredit how good the Clippers are, but it doesn't really hold any extra weight for me. You know, I think it's more of a city thing. I think it's more of a fan thing. And that's not to diminish how big of a rivalry the battle for LA is, you know, just in a sense of history and how long it's been a Clippers versus Lakers thing. But I mean, them being as good as they are this year, I don't think adds any more, I don't know, at least, like, I feel bad saying it because it's obviously like one of the biggest matchups and it's the biggest names in the game that we have playing against each other. But you know, I'm sort of robotic in a sense that like, man, this is another game where I know what they're going to bring. Now we got to know what we're going to bring to be prepared for it.
Two more quick ones and I'll let you go. Why do you wear number 4?
It was a number given to me at Summer League 2017.
And you just kept it?
Just kept it. Worked well for me. Why change it? Some of the best basketball I played at the time, and it's continuing to be the best basketball I can play.
Where did the headband start? I'm sure you've answered this before. I just don't remember. Yeah.
My teammate JaVale McGee, he hooked me up. I was getting a little sloppy. I had like a bunch of facial hair that was looking a little homeless. My hair was a little crazy, and so he hooked me up with his barber, got a cut, and then he's been my guiding source of LA culture. He's trying to liven me up a little bit. So he came up and he told me I need to rock the headband, and I listen to JaVale when he gives me advice because it's usually good stuff.
JaVale McGee, veteran mentor, was not something you would have seen coming in like 2011, 2012.
No chance. Probably not. I don't say no chance because that's my guy. But yeah, he's it goes to the show the evolution of this team is all the guys on the team are in different walks of life than they were 8 years ago, a decade ago. I wasn't a professional player. Some of these guys were in the first half of their career, so it's been nice to have everybody at this stage in their career and be teammates with them.
Well, no matter what happens, I just hope you stay safe and healthy. I hope we all stay safe and healthy, but I hope that the NBA can find a way for us to resolve the season and have everyone be safe. Yep. That's the most important thing, because every team deserves to cap its journey and to have a sense of closure, but your team, more than any team in the league this year, has really been through a lot and seemed to be cresting at the right time, but we'll see what happens. Alex Caruso, it has been a joy watching you play. You are not a meme. You are a good basketball player, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and I hope to see you somewhere that's not a bubble in before like 2022.
Yeah, it might be TV. You might have to give a wave and say hi, Mom, but I'm on the same boat, man. I'm hoping we get this resolved safely and get back to some normality of life eventually.
Be well, and we'll look forward to seeing you play one way or the other. Thank you, Alex Caruso, everybody.
Hello, man. Thanks for having me on.